I have the opinion of the court in case 22-451, Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo, and 22-1218, Relentless versus the Department of Commerce. In these cases, two groups of Atlantic herring fishermen have challenged a rule issued by the National Marine Fisheries Service. For an agency to issue such a rule, it must have authorization in a statute passed by Congress. The statute the service relied on here authorizes it to require fishermen to make space on their vessels for federal observers who monitor the catch and collect data. It also identifies three specific categories of fishermen responsible for bearing costs associated with observers. But the small family-owned businesses that fish for herring in the Atlantic are not among those groups. In 2020, though, the service nonetheless issued a rule requiring Atlantic herring fishermen to pay for the required observers. The service estimated at the time that the costs could reduce returns to vessel owners by as much as 20%. The fishermen each sued the service, arguing that the statute does not authorize the service to require them to pay observer costs. The question before us is not whether the fishermen are right. It is instead how courts are supposed to decide cases like these, in which an agency's interpretation of a statute is at issue. You might expect courts to simply say what the best interpretation of the statute is. But one of our decisions, Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council, requires something quite different. Under Chevron, a court must decide first whether the statute is ambiguous. If the court decides that the law is clear and unambiguous, it can go ahead and say what the best reading of the statute is. But if the court thinks the statute is ambiguous, there is a second step. The dispositive question then becomes whether the agency's interpretation is a permissible one. If a court thinks it is, and they usually do, the court must follow what the agency says, even if it thinks another interpretation is better. Returning to the fishermen who brought these cases, each of the courts below, applying Chevron's two-step framework, rejected their challenges. The fishermen then sought our review, asking us to revisit our decision in Chevron, and we agreed to do so. We start from first principles. The framers of our Constitution assigned to the courts, not the political branches, the responsibility and power to say what the law is, as Chief Justice Marshall famously put it in Marbury against Madison. And they expected courts to do so by applying their own independent judgment. Indeed, they designed the Constitution to shield that judgment from the influence of the political branches. From Marbury on, the court repeatedly emphasized its duty to exercise independent judgment in interpreting the laws passed by Congress. The court maintained that the views of the executive branch warranted respect and could supply important guidance, but could not bind a court. And the court reaffirmed that understanding even through the New Deal era, when new agencies with new powers proliferated. In 1946, Congress codified these basic principles in the Administrative Procedure Act. That law, known as the APA for short, says that a court reviewing agency action, quote, shall decide all relevant questions of law, end quote, interpret constitutional and statutory provisions, end quote. That language means what it says. Courts, not agencies, must decide all relevant questions of law when reviewing agency action. And although the APA tells courts to defer to agencies on other matters, it does not tell them to defer to agencies on questions of law. If Congress wanted courts to do so, in a break with more than a century of consistent practice, it needed to and would have said so, but it did not. For four decades after the APA's enactment, courts continued to follow the traditional understanding. But then in 1984, we decided Chevron, which triggered a marked departure from that approach. Remember, Chevron's two-step framework requires a court to defer to an agency's interpretation of an ambiguous statute if that interpretation is permissible, even if the court thinks there is a better reading. Chevron is inconsistent with the APA. Chevron says that if a statute is ambiguous, a supposedly permissible agency reading must prevail over what a court determines is the best reading of a statute. Put more simply, Chevron tells courts that in some cases, rather than file their own judgment, they must instead ignore it and follow the agency's instead. The APA says otherwise. The government's principal response is that under Chevron, courts correctly presume that by leaving ambiguity in statutes, Congress implicitly delegates discretionary authority to resolve them to agencies. The problem is that the presumption makes little sense. Congress knows how to delegate discretionary authority to agencies. To take one common example, statutes often empower agencies to regulate as reasonable or appropriate. And when Congress has actually delegated discretionary authority to an agency, a court's job under the APA is to say so and give effect to Congress's choice. But a mere statutory ambiguity is not itself such a delegation. A statute might be ambiguous for any number of reasons. After all, courts often encounter statutory ambiguities in cases having nothing to do with agencies. In those cases, courts understand that no matter how impenetrable the statute may appear, there is a best reading, and their job is to say what that reading is. None of that changes just because an agency enters the picture. It would be especially inappropriate, in fact, for a court to simply go with what an agency says when the question involves, as Chevron cases typically do, the scope of the agency's own power. The government counters that Congress must intend for agencies to resolve ambiguities because agencies are subject matter experts. But courts, not agencies, are the experts in interpreting statutes, including technical ones. And in agency cases in particular, courts may seek guidance, as they often have, from the informed judgment of the executive branch. So giving agencies the final interpretive authority, as Chevron effectively does, is just not necessary to ensure that interpretation is informed by relevant subject matter expertise. The government also argues that Chevron's presumption makes sense because resolving ambiguities really involves policymaking. Policymaking is, of course, the responsibility of the political branches, not us judges. But every day, courts resolve statutory ambiguities by engaging in legal interpretation, not imposing individual policy preferences. So Chevron does not prevent judges from making policy. It prevents them from judging. To try to fix Chevron's flaws, we have spent decades adding various preconditions and exceptions to the doctrine. To avoid the complicated doctrinal breakdance that Chevron has become as a result, courts often simply decline to apply it. We are guilty of that ourselves. We have not deferred to an agency under Chevron since 2016. In short, Chevron is both wrong and increasingly irrelevant. But that conclusion does not end our analysis. We must still determine whether the doctrine of stare decisis, Latin for let the decision stand, requires us to keep adhering to Chevron anyway. It does not. Chevron was a fundamentally misguided decision. It reshaped judicial review of agency action without even mentioning the APA. And it has confounded the litigants and courts that have had to apply it. Nobody seems to know how much ambiguity in a statute is enough to trigger Chevron's second step, or even when ambiguity exists in the first place. That means that results under Chevron are arbitrary and unpredictable. And it is also unpredictable whether a court will even invoke Chevron or instead try to avoid it. Chevron also destroys reliance interests. Its logic is that a statutory ambiguity is a license for the agency to change positions as much as it likes. By allowing agencies to change course even when Congress has given them no power to do so, Chevron leaves those attempting to plan around agency action in a fog of uncertainty. Stare decisis does not require us to stick with a misguided, unworkable, and harmful decision. The time has come to leave it behind. Chevron is overruled. But that does not mean that past cases that relied on Chevron must go, too. We do not dispense with statutory precedents just because we have changed how we decide cases. Going forward, though, courts must exercise independent judgment in deciding whether agencies have acted within their statutory authority as the APA requires. They cannot let the executive branch say what the law is just because the law is ambiguous. Because the courts of appeals for the D.C. Circuit and the First Circuit were bound to apply Chevron rather than simply interpret the statute before them, their judgments are vacated. and the cases are remanded for further proceedings consistent with our opinion. Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch have filed concurring opinions. Justice Kagan has filed a dissenting opinion in which Justice Sotomayor and Justice Jackson join. Justice Jackson did not participate in the D.C. Circuit case, case number 22-451.